You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright. The power to create a happier, healthier life drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected. A place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. How are you all? Are you ready for a really tremendous show? Tonight we have a very special guest, Barnett Bain, who is an award-winning motion picture producer, director, writer, with film credits of such great movies such as Celestine Prophecy, Jesus, also known as the Jesus film, and the upcoming movie with Eckhart Tolle. Barnett just wrote a new book called The Book of Doing and Being, Rediscovering Creativity in Life, Love, and Work. And Barnett and I really have some profound conversations tonight, so I really think you're going to love the show, so stay tuned. Now, I want to talk to you about the power of your words tonight. Somebody recently chastised me for saying the word unbelievable, saying that the word is lower vibration and it tells the universe a different message from what I wanted to express. And this really, really made me think. So I started examining everything and I came up with this conclusion. A word is not an energy being. It doesn't produce any energy within itself. The only thing that gives that word a vibration is my belief surrounding that word. And truthfully, I really like the word unbelievable because to me this means amazing, delightful, magnificent. So to me, my belief around the word is extremely positive, and this is the belief and energy that I place into the universe to be read. If the universe is this huge energy source that created everything through love, well, it's smart enough to decipher my personal energy surrounding the word because the outcome flows into my personal hologram, which creates my personal life. Just to make an even more poignant point, words have different meanings, like a dam that holds water, and dam, which is considered to be a curse word. And the term Allah is good for many people, and yet it's also a term that is considered bad by many people. The same can be said for Jesus. Many people use it as a curse word, and many use it as a holy word. Or let's take the word heaven. It could mean the moon or stars or the universe, or it could be a place to land in the afterlife. So when it comes to the words you speak, feel out what your beliefs are behind them. And if you get something that you didn't want, look into your beliefs behind your spoken word. And when somebody does not like you using a certain word, well, that's based on their belief of the word. That's their problem, not yours. If they don't want to hear your belief around the word as you're explaining it to them, then that might mean that you're talking to a person in which you can't be your true self. This person may not allow you to speak or live your own truths in order for you to remember. I personally decided to walk away from this person and just quietly stay away. I didn't come here to meld into what someone else thinks I should say or be. I came here to remember. It's an individual thing and one that I will not ever compromise on. This brings us to another point. You are here on this planet to remember. This means that you already know everything. You know the past, you know the present, and you know the future. You already know everything. When you find yourself drawn to a subject matter, That means that you are simply resonating with the subject. This is you remembering. When someone tells you that you must believe in their way in order to belong or in order to be liked, like many religions tell you to do today, well, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to remember that you came to this planet to experience a life based on memories and beliefs, not to come here to live someone else's beliefs. You are perfect the way you are. You don't need to change unless you feel the need to change. You don't need to accept another's belief. You have exclusive right to your own mind and to the way you think. Having said that, in order to have a happy coexistence, you must be able to tolerate another's belief. That's their choice, and they have the right to believe in that without judgment. You can always walk away with a smile on your face because you know who you are. You know what you resonate with, and you know that you are remembering what it is that you are supposed to be remembering. You don't need a guru to tell you anything different. You just need to fully engage in what you came here to accomplish, and that is to remember. That's it. Doesn't that make life a lot easier? I think so. So let's take a fast commercial break and we'll be right back.
So if manifesting $10,000 within the next 90 days sounds good to you, then listen up, because we have a proven system that hundreds of people have already used to manifest tens of thousands of dollars. And right now, we're getting ready to launch a new study, and we're looking for 100 qualified participants who desire to manifest $10,000 or more within the next 90 days. This is a no money down opportunity, and we're looking for 100 people only for the study. So to find out if you qualify, head over right now to manifest10k.com. That's manifest, then the number 10 and the letter k.com. manifest10k.com.
You're listening to Law of Attraction Radio Network, enhancing the well-being of millions of listeners worldwide. LOARadionetwork.com is heard through 25 different internet radio stations, as well as iTunes Radio, Stitcher.com, and our mobile apps. The Law of Attraction Radio Network, your trusted source of daily inspiration at LOARadionetwork.com.
It's here, it's hot, and it's a must read. It's The Science Behind the Law of Attraction magazine. Every issue brings you great articles and in-depth how-tos from all your favorite Law of Attraction experts, authors, scientists, and medical professionals. Go to lawofattractionmagazine.net. That's lawofattractionmagazine.net.
Okay, we are back, and you are listening to Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Well, the Law of Attraction magazine is now out, and we are getting some really, really great reviews. I've been getting some terrific emails about my article on the trip to Nigeria and what it means for world peace. Many have said it's intriguing and just full of all kinds of vital information on what we can do collectively to bring about world peace. And yes, world peace is possible in our lifetime, in my lifetime. So let's move mountains together. We also have got terrific articles on wealth, and there is this really terrific recipe on raw peanut butter cookies that is so good. Yes, I tried it, and it's delicious. It's amazing that something that healthy can taste so good. So if you want to read the June issue, which features Foster and Kimberly Gamble and their exclusive articles on the Law of Attraction. I'm going to let you in on a secret. If you go to Law of Attraction Radio Network and choose the LOA magazine, you can read the entire June issue for absolutely free. Go to loaradionetwork.com and hit the menu for LOA magazine, and you will be redirected to where you can read the entire magazine on your iPad or tablet or computer or even your cell phone. This is just my thanks to you for being a part of my life. I don't think you realize how much I appreciate each and every single one of you. You and your energy has touched me to keep on expanding. So thank you. And enjoy the magazine, loaradionetwork.com, and click on LOA Magazine. Also, our Law of Attraction Singles Cruise is going great guns. June 13th is the cutoff date for the early bird prices. This means that the rates are going up. So secure your place now by paying your deposit. You'll be so glad you did. Go to loaradionetwork.com/love-boat. Now, let's talk to award-winning motion picture producer and director Barnett Bain, who lives in Santa Monica, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump from here. I think that you're really, really going to appreciate everything he says. And if you want to find out more information about Barnett or to read his latest and greatest book, go to barnettbain.com. Well, welcome, Barnett, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I am thrilled to have you on my show today.
I'm so pleased to be here. This has been a long time coming. You and I are very much moving the same circles, and so I'm tickled to connect with you at last.
At last. And, you know, I have been reading all about you, and you have got some of the wonderful things about creative intelligence. And I just love that. That's really what spirituality is about, creative intelligence. And you've nailed it. You have absolutely nailed it. And that's why I think having you on my show is going to reveal a lot to my listeners.
Well, I hope so. I couldn't agree with you more. Creativity is love's labor, and so is spirituality. So I come at it as a way to speak about spiritual and creative matters in a manner that is maybe a little more approachable and accessible to more people.
That's important, especially right now in the history of the planet. We are waking up to our true power. And that power is the ability to really create anything that we are desiring or that we are passionate about. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about. But before we get into your really terrific book, The Book of Doing and Being, I really like to talk about releasing the stories of the past. And why is that so important as part of the creative intelligence?
Well, first, I think it's, thank you for asking this question, because it is the key question to all creativity. And I believe also it's a key spiritual question. We have to begin by understanding that we are conditioned by our environment, by our early upbringing, our parenting, our religious experience, our educational experience, our media experience, our community experience, the life we're born into. It, I call it the, because I'm a movie guy, I call it the primary scenario. in which all of the characters have already been cast and they're all wearing their makeup and their hair is done and they all have the costumes and they all have their backstories and their values. And then we come in as little people. We're just dropped in there.
Yeah.
And we become molded. We either are drawn to the experiences that are around us or we push away from them. We react to them. But in either case, whether we're drawn to them or we push away from them, they define us. And so we have hand-me-down lives. Mm-hmm. Now, we have the opportunity to have handmade lives too. But only once we realize the degree to which our thinking and our feelings and our choices and the emotional triggers that we respond to are all the result of being born into this primary movie. When we understand that and we understand the depth of it, only then can we feel it. And only then can we acknowledge it and make peace with it and let it go. Until we really understand that, you can't sell a car that you don't have the pink slips to.
Yeah.
So it's a part of the process of loving and growing is to recognize the stories that we live inside of.
So could you tell us the story of your past and what got you even looking at this as a block?
I don't really use that kind of language, the block. And the reason I don't is because it makes a presumption that we're in a struggle. And also it makes a presumption that there's a menu, like cards being dealt in a hand, that there's a few blocks, and if you get past them, life becomes something else. So it's not so much, I don't treat it in that way. You know, life is a gorgeous process of becoming. It's not a process of crossing finish lines. And so it's not so much blocks for me. It is the understanding. Let me be really specific.
Mm-hmm.
When I was born, before I was born, let's even go before that. This is how far back it goes. When my mother was carrying me, she was in the middle of a divorce. She was 19 years old. She already had a four-year-old child. She was going on 20, so at 16 she'd had her first child, and she was carrying me and in the process of a divorce and very concerned about her future and filled with anxiety and shame and humiliation and fear and worried about money and worried about all kinds of things. Now, as I'm being carried in the womb, her chemicals of emotion and mine are one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm precognitive. This is even before I'm able to have my neocortex functioning where I can think in terms of logic and reason. And so my limbic brain is purely attuned to body sensation and viscera, and all of her chemistry and all her anxiety and all of her fears and all of her thoughts, it's like one big martini, one cocktail, and we're both drinking it. So before I am even born, my system is being programmed, blueprinted, with anxieties that are not my own, and they're pre-verbal.
Mm.
When we come out into the world, this continues for quite some time. So this is the degree to which we enter the world pre-programmed. It's not really, you know, in our community, we are so enthralled with our seven steps to this and our five steps to the other thing. We have we're so enthralled of processes that we think will liberate us. And they do set us increasingly, they give us more and more freedom.
Right.
To peel back more and more layers of the onion. But there is a conditioning that we are not in touch with. that the gaining of intimacy of which allows us to have a very different perspective on life. And on the other side of, I'm not on the other side of that, so I can't speak to what's on the other side of it. But in the process of becoming close and tender and intimate with the defining stories that are the womb in which thought and belief and choice and decision and feeling and attitude and all of the things, all of the raw materials of reality creation that we are aware of, inside of that womb, those take shape. But unless we, and until we become intimate with the very womb in which those elements take shape, we are not truly free. So it is the equivalent to moving the furniture around in the house.
Right.
Is that helpful? Does that give?
Yeah, it really does. It's really, we are coming in regardless of our stories afterwards, but we're coming in with already our parent or our mothers. And I think it actually goes beyond that because it's going
many generations
because of the DNA
yes.
from our ancestors. So we're picking up a whole bunch of goodies.
Well, we're picking up goodies, and inside of that superseding generational story, inside of that, we put together a life. What we're coming to understand is the life we put together that we address through all sorts of love and all sorts of growth and all kinds of spiritual and psychological practices that give us more and more room. We are coming to understand that the room that we are gaining still exists inside of a bubble, of a primary story.
Yeah.
And it is the becoming intimate with that story. It's that story. On the other side of that, we will experience something brand new, a virgin experience of what it is to be alive. Inside the story, we can make all sorts of adjustments that are fun and have more flow and have more abundance and have more prosperity, but they have abundance and prosperity in the terms of the recipe of the cake, if you follow the metaphor.
Right.
Where it's still inside a given recipe, and the transformation that is happening, that is lies in wait for as a potential for those willing to grasp it and destined to grasp it, a destiny both chosen and self-chosen, is not a better version of what was, although that's there too, and many of us are already experiencing that. It is not what was version 2.0 or improved. It is something very different.
And it's part of the creative intelligence.
Yes, it is part of the creative intelligence. It is the creative intelligence.
Okay.
And there are hallmarks of it that we can begin to see as we explore the assumptions that we make about what life is. We can begin to recognize some of the hallmarks. For one thing, the nature, the enchanted nature of aliveness, the enchanted nature of our connection to all things. All things are in constant communication with us personally because all things are one. And so at the level of attunement that we are operating from, we can tune into all things, all of which are freighted with meaning and all of which are in personal communication with us. That is an astonishing, astonishing piece to let in.
But how do you let these signs or this communication from everything that is mm-hmm. come into your life? How do you open up to see the messages that connects us all?
Well, some of it is we have certain kind of calibrators. We have senses, five senses: sight, sound, smell, touch, taste. Mm-hmm. These are the senses by which we calibrate the outer world. We also have senses by which we calibrate the hidden worlds. And by hidden, they aren't hidden at all. They are simply the world that exists beyond, the world as it exists beyond the five senses. We are in that original blueprinting, that encoding that we spoke about earlier, that first story, mm-hmm. that bubble of that first story that's generational. It screens reality out, and what it admits is reality that is appreciable, that we can perceive through the five senses, and that we can make stories about through logic and reason. There is a world that beyond that exists beyond the border of logic and reason, and beyond the border of the five senses. For example, people are beginning to open to another sense, gut instincts and intuitions.
Mm-hmm.
They are beginning to open to a sense of the flow of things, that we have an appreciation of that there is a movement of consciousness, there is an evolution of consciousness, and if we are attuned to it, we can actually feel it like movement, like we can feel ourselves being attracted toward it.
Exactly.
There are feelings of warmth, and I don't mean warmth in the sense of temperature, but the warmth or coldness of another human being or anything else that is conscious for that matter. We walk into a room and we have an immediate sensing, if we attune to it, of the warmth of another individual, of the aliveness of another individual. Sometimes we call that charisma, but it's really about the aliveness, the soul vitality of it, how the amount of clutter that stands between the soul's expression, mm-hmm. As at the personality level. We can tune into that very quickly. We tune into that. So there are all kinds of senses, uncommon senses, as opposed to the common senses that we are beginning to discover. And what they all have in common, what they all do have in common, is that they're in the body. So we don't experience ourselves very much as embodied consciousness. It's a paradox because we're incarnated, or so we believe, but most of the time I know that I spend a lot of my day in my head.
Right.
Impulses come, or experiences come, and some of them beautiful and some of them that make me tense, and I immediately shuttle out of my body up into my head where I try to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we learn to do that very, very young. We learn to do it very, very young. You know, maybe I'm being held by my mother, and no matter how good we are as parents, a parent can never, ever meet the needs of another human being. So maybe my mother, however wonderful she was, maybe she was on the phone while she was feeding me, and I wanted attention, and I didn't get it. And so as a small person, you don't know how to handle that sort of thing. You don't know how to handle the energetics of longing and unfulfilled desire. It's too much for that tiny little nervous system. So we shuttle out, and we shuttle up into the head. And at the point at which our neocortex is starting to develop, and we are beginning slowly to learn how to process higher thinking, executive function, logic, mm-hmm. reason. Now I'm starting to learn how to make sense out of my experience. And so I start by making a story. She doesn't love me, or I'm bad, or I'm wrong, or I'm defective, or I did something wrong, or she's doing something wrong. We start making stories. I think this is what the Adam and Eve tale is about, biting the tree of knowledge. Once we bite the tree of knowledge, we take up residence there.
Right.
And it becomes a habit, and we start to more and more, we retreat, we shuttle up into the head, and pretty soon we have maps of memory. Our memory, it's literally encoded in our brain as neural maps. And we just get comfortable there and forget our bodies. We have a very little sense of the body aliveness, of the energy, the chi that is moving at all times through our bodies. And I know, unless I slow down and pay very, very close attention, or I do breath work of some kind, I have no sense whatsoever of the aliveness of my body. It's just something that carries around my head most of the time.
Right. So your book, The Book of Doing and Being, is basically about this and how we are within our body and we're doing things, but we're being conscious now of being. Is that correct?
Well, yes, absolutely. The book is about lots of things that we've discussed, things that we haven't discussed. It's also about techniques. I live around lots of young people, and they like to talk about hacks, technology hacks. So lots of creativity hacks, so that if you want to be a painter or a musician or create a symphony or a circus or a relationship, or a relationship with yourself, or a relationship with a significant other, or a business. These are all creative acts, and they all require an intimacy with a certain kind of not only doing. We know how to do, but there are lots of techniques, and there's lots of techniques and practices in the book, more than 40 around doing, as well as many, many practices that have to do with being. Being is the state that holds doing. Whatever we're doing, whether it's tying shoes or driving to pick up the milk or take the kids to school, that activity takes place in a being state. And it is the being state that defines, that holds the possibility for the successful completion of the doing. If I have all the technique and skill in the world at running a business, but my being state is perpetually calibrated to struggle, mm-hmm. then the doing will be inflected with struggle. The being state is not something that that exists in the head. Being states only exist in the body. The head sort of hijacks them, but being states have to do with our emotional states. And so the big secret of the Book of Doing and Being is that the big secret to creativity and to a spiritual elegance is that intimacy with our emotional states, embodied, not as thoughts about our emotional states, gives us access to all sorts of creative gold and all sorts of intimate gold and all sorts of states of exuberance and states of flow and passion and compassion. And then the doing aspect of actively expressing those states, that becomes in service of something very, very different. The agendas and the goals become very, very different from can I get the job? Can I get the girl? Can I get the car? Yes, you can have all of those things. We can all have all of those things. Beyond that, there's more.
So what is the more? What's the bottom line that we should be striving for? You know, success, and there's a lot of people that are just striving for success, but success is just a word. It's not the emotion of being happy or a being, you know? What is the bottom line that we need to really look at achieving?
Well, it's different for everyone, and so I wouldn't presume to make a prescription for everyone, because people operate at their own levels and at their own pace of love and their own pace of growth. I will say that every story is a love story. Mm-hmm. Every action is a response to love. It is a longing for love. Even the most vile and depraved, meaning people, these people who are psychopathic in Iraq now, the ISIS people, mm-hmm. underlying, what are they doing? They are meeting a very deep spiritual and creative needs. They have a sense of community. They belong. They have a sense of purpose and a sense of meaning. This is what we all want. To be known, to be seen. Now they are doing it out of a disintegrated, depraved expression of it. We always come to love, either through joy or through pain. The pain will take us to the same place.
Exactly.
You know, at the bottom of pain is at the bottom of the darkness of pain, there is beauty. You remember 9/11?
Mm-hmm.
So we know things like people, young boys and girls on battlefields who are terrified out of their within an inch of their lives. They suddenly have access, soul access, to what is beautiful and good and true about them. So all I will say is that everyone functions at their own level and their own pace of growth, but it is always threading back to what we said earlier about the movement of things. We are always being pulled toward, at the same time as we are ourselves rushing toward, spiritual growth and love and connection and a sense of the enchantment, the oneness.
Okay, let's go back there for a second, because you're touching on a very important topic. You talked about ISIS. Well, I just got back from Africa. I was in Nigeria, right next to the place where Boko Haram was roaming and taking all those girls. What is, and I can appreciate that they have a sense of belonging and they're feeling good about what they're doing according to their beliefs.
They may not be feeling good about it. It's not about whether they're feeling good about it or not good about it. It is that what drives all human endeavor, all consciousness, what drives all consciousness is an inbuilt, a baked in a trajectory toward wholeness. And so this psychopathic behavior is a misguided attempt to find a meaning and value and connection. You may notice that all wars are these days are holy wars.
Oh, yes.
All wars are spiritual wars. All war is at the bottom of that holy war mentality. Even below that, they are all chauvinist wars.
Yes.
They are all, and underneath chauvinism, which is not simply as vile as it is a violence towards women and a castration of what it is to be a man. Underneath it is an elevation of will and action, of doing, over connecting and feeling, of being. Underneath all chauvinism is an elevation of doing over being. And to the extent that in our own lives we elevate doing over emotional aliveness, then we have we perpetuate in our own lives. Chauvinism. I'm not equating it to anything vile. I'm not making that connection at all.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that the degree to which we are participants in our own cocktail, our own equation of chauvinism, is the degree to which we shut out our own creative potential and we are locked inside of that original story that goes back many generations. The freedom beyond that lies on the other side of understanding our own chauvinism. Not that it needs to be expressed like these psychopaths in Africa or in Asia or in the Middle East or down the block here in anywhere USA, but that it begins with us understanding in our own lives, how do I value my embodied visceral experience? Am I even intimate with it relative to my strategic thinking? How much of my spiritual growth is about getting stuff? And which is fine, it's beautiful. And how much of it is about how much is it about being intimate with my emotional life and with my sense of connection and community, with my own aliveness? Do I have a sense of what my own aliveness is as an experience in my body? Mm-hmm. Is that something that I can put my hand up and say, I'm aware of that, I own that? Oh, yes, I can put up my hand and say, yes, I'm a sportsman. I know how to run 5 miles a day. I'm not talking about achievement.
Right.
I'm talking about the aliveness of my own body at rest.
Interesting. So, touching back on this thing, I want to know, how are we as beings supposed to be, or what are we to do about these things going on, these psychopaths? Are we just to accept them, or are we supposed to do something to rid ourselves? I mean,
well, the interesting thing, if you look at the question, the question was, as you put it, is what are we supposed to do? So we are conditioned by habit, mm-hmm, and constantly reinforced in this notion that we can think our way out of, that we can outthink life, and that there are things we can do to respond to the challenges of aliveness. There are also ways we can be to respond to the challenges of aliveness. And it is a premise of the book of doing and being that we are expert in doing, and all the doing that has gotten us here this far will not take us farther. It will not take us where we want to go, because we are leaving the other half of the equation behind. How can we be such that the challenges that we face begin to find some solution and resolution?
Right.
That's a different conversation. How can we be? That involves beginning to develop a relationship with our own being. We're human beings. Mm-hmm. So, and we live in a God-filled universe, and we have a love affair with our doing nature, which unfortunately comes at the expense of having abandoned our being nature. So, the solutions to finding paths to this new world are individual. We come to the world individually, And then the wonderful, beautiful, beautiful irony is that when I come to the world individually, when you come to the world individually, you change it for everyone. Because it's enchanted. We're all one at some level.
So by thinking of these issues, and not necessarily doing, but by thinking on them individually, we are doing something.
I would say by thinking about them, we have some impact, and it's the kind of impact that we're comfortable with, because we're comfortable around thinking. But thinking is a skill set that is held inside of something much larger. If I am not my thinking, do I exist? If you are not your thinking, do you exist, Jules?
That's a brilliant question.
Well, I can help you with the answer. You do.
I do exist.
You do exist, whether you are thinking or not.
Okay.
There are some times when you think more, and there are some times when you think less, and there are some times when you practically don't have a thought at all, times of such exquisite well-being. Can you recall such a time?
Oh, yes.
So then it is accurate, fairly accurate to say, beyond thinking, we still exist.
Yes, I can see that now.
There is a thinker, there is a being that does the thinking. So who's the being that's doing the thinking? The being that is that has the capacity to think, that being has the capacity to be. The being hold is almost like a womb that holds the space for lots of kinds of capacities, including thinking.
Wow, this is deep. This is really great information.
Oh, I'm glad. I hope it's helpful to you. I hope it's helpful to people that are listening to us.
Oh, it's powerful, powerful. Because what I love about it is that you're making me think in a new direction. It's very powerful. And it's creative. And I'm hitting that creative nerve. It's like, wow, this is so phenomenal. This is really good. Boy, I got to tell you, I got to tell the audience, this is a book to read. You're terrific.
Well, I hope that people will read it, and I hope that they will make use of the practices, and that they will play with them. And there's not any right or wrong to how they are experienced, but they will open some channels to new ways of being in the world, because we are already very expert, all of us, particularly those in our community, Jules, in the community that you and I move in. Mm-hmm. Our community is very gifted and very talented, very expert. They are masters of laws of attraction, and they are masters of all sorts of spiritual practices. We have an uncommon ability to operate at the very fringes, at the very boundaries and borderline of what the consensus world understands as human potential. And we can add on to it as well, because beyond that mastery of concept and idea, beyond it lies an entire field. I think there, what was that wonderful, I'm going to mangle it now. I think it's a Rumi poem that goes something like, out beyond the field of time and space, out beyond time and space, there's a field, I'll meet you there, something like that. Mm-hmm. Well, out beyond logic and reason, there is a field. So one of the hallmarks, we mentioned one, a couple of them earlier, another of the hallmarks of what lies in store for us as spiritual beings, growing, expanding the idea of what it is to be a human being, out beyond our ability to have strategies and have formulas and have steps, out beyond logic and reason, there is something more beyond logic and reason. So we want to begin to be attuned to what exists beyond logic and reason without losing sight of logic and reason, without abandoning it. But there is more. Beauty itself is not logical or reasonable. And that's one of the divine gifts that shines through and calls to us every moment, summons us beyond logic, beyond reason, into the more of what it is to be a divine, to be part of a divine intelligence. Not all intelligence is logical. Not all intelligence is thought-based. The world is, nature is all shivering in ecstasy, not because it is delighting only in its thinking capacity. So beauty is the divine shining through cracks in our logic and reason.
I like it.
All beauty is a direct communication from the divine. There's nothing logical about it. In fact, it scrambles our ability to be logical and reasonable. What is beauty? Beauty is the simultaneous experience of great excitement and great peace. At the same time, the brain, the logic can't handle that. Try, think about that. We can't think about that. We can't handle it.
That's true.
And that is a breadcrumb. It is a trail of enchantment that is left for us. It's there everywhere for us to discover, to pick up the trail like a beautiful hound dog on the scent of something. Sniff up that trail, follow that trail. Because beyond this love affair with thinking that we have, with the straight line, there is the poetry of being. And it is beautiful. And yes, the doing world is God-filled. And the doing world in a co-creation with being states, that is something brand new for us on this planet. And that is something brand new in the history of what it is to be a human being.
Exactly. Because we are expanding.
Yes.
And life is changing. When you first did your first movie, the people have changed dramatically since then up to now. It's like there is a fast movement of change spiritually in our beings, in recognizing so many new things. There's more to understand. It's just a brilliant time to be alive, to experience this. I just feel so blessed.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you're absolutely right. When I did my first movie, was Jesus, the Jesus film.
Uh-huh.
And my idea of life and of spirituality was beautiful and very predictable. Mm-hmm. It was very much an understanding, a biblical understanding. And over the years, by the time I'd gone from Jesus to What Dreams May Come, the awareness, my exploration, my willingness to discover and to be discovered by spirituality, the story of how I held spirituality had changed dramatically from spirituality being a narrowly defined, though beautiful story of love and guidance to an experience of all things. There is only spirituality going on, and that the practice of spirituality for me had become one of threading together my particular relationship with all that is in such a way that I could feel my own connection, my own tenderness, being held as a part of this oneness, of this enchantment. That what dreams may come already was quite some time ago. The films that I make are always reflections of my own spiritual ruminations and my own spiritual journey. It's sort of like doing long division where you show your work. And so now I'm making a film based on a story by Eckhart Tolle and about a little boy who's very stressed out. His parents are having financial issues and relationship issues, and they are working very, very hard, and they look like, you know, they have to be workaholics in order to survive, and there's all sorts of behaviors that are going on there that seem to be very, very normal. Lots of doings, a lot of doingness is going on, and the impact of it on the boy is that he does not feel that he is the priority in the parents' lives. And of course, there are all sorts of explanations and reasons, because the mind always has an explanation to support its agenda.
Right.
And but the evidence of the movie is that the boy is neurotic, and the boy is neurotic because the parents are neurotic. And the irony is that the parents' behavior looks perfectly normal. We all do it. You know, we all do it. It is a imbalance of doing, untempered by being. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the movie's about. And fortunately for this little boy, he has a grandfather who is in the end zone of his life, who is a career military person, and who is a bad father and a terrible husband, and now at the having lost many, many friends over in many wars and had his heart broken many times, unlike Humpty Dumpty, managed to put himself back together again. And he has a total embodied presence. Not total, but quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And he is in his body, in his world, aware of his emotions, not getting lost in them, but not denying them, not overthinking things, not ruminating, not lost in the past, not obsessing about the future, in the present. And when he is with that boy feels seen and heard, and that he matters, and that he is loved not for what he does, but for who he is, and that he is free in the eyes of his grandfather to become more than his grandfather, less than his grandfather, different than his grandfather, to become his own person, mm-hmm. without risking the loss of love. So all of these can only be imparted to another human being from someone who is in their bodies, feeling their body aliveness. It doesn't happen through the head, because the head is detached. The head is not a being state.
I get it. That's brilliant. When is this movie coming out?
We're shooting it in September, so I'm not sure when our listeners will be listening to the show. So it'll be out in 16.
Oh, in 2016.
End of 2016.
Oh, wow. Great. Well, I hope you'll come back on and tell us when it's airing so that we can go and watch it.
Theaters, so you will definitely, I will be happy to come on then and anytime you'll have me. I really am loving speaking with you, and I hope that it's valuable.
Oh, Yes, it's extremely valuable. And with that, we are all out of time. You are so wonderful, and I can see why you make such terrific movies. It's because you are a great storyteller, but you really get into the real nitty-gritty, the basis of us being our humanness. So it's just wonderful. Thank you so much, Barnett.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure to be with you here today, Jules, and I look forward to the next time.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to Jules@LOARadionetwork.com, and have a great week.